Their service, sunny and very mild, a high of 49. Right now, a little breeze from the southwest at 8. Sunshine and 35 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. This will be our last 2023 interview involving Nan Calvert. Where has the time gone? Time flies when you're having fun. And it's always a fun time with Nan Calvert as she brings on a monthly basis various guests to the morning show that help us think about the natural world around us in new and different ways, heightening our understanding and appreciation and concern for the well-being of the planet on which we live. And certainly this final interview of 2023 is very much in that spirit. We are welcoming into our studios today two staff members from the Humble Oak Folk School, which I believe operates under the auspices of the Humble Oaks Outdoor Learning and Arts Collective. And we are going to be finding out all about that from Erin Houlihan, who is director, and Ellie Barbeau, who is one of the folk school instructors. So we welcome all three of you to the morning show. Glad that you are here.
Thank you.
So, Nan, tell us kind of the interesting story of how you came to know about the Humble Oak Folk School, which I guess I neglected to mention is located on the outskirts of East Troy. Mm-hmm. So not just down the block, but certainly right here in southeastern Wisconsin.
Absolutely, yes. So somehow or another, I connected with their other co-founder, co-director, Jody Janovic. And I think probably through fiber art, she and I are both felters as well as other things. And she mentioned Humble Oak, and I said, what is that? And she told me all about it, and I thought, wow, people need to know that right here in southeastern Wisconsin, we have a folk school. Perhaps our listeners have heard of North House Folk School in Minnesota and the Driftless Folk School here in Wisconsin. And folk schools teach an amazing array of things, literally from A to Z. And many of them, like Humble Oak, also have a focus on the environment, native plants, getting rid of invasives, which is, you know, music to my heart. And so I thought, yeah, we need people to come out, take classes, support the school, and see what they're doing, not only with community outreach for adults and families, but also their living school, which has to do with educating young people. So that's why we're all here today.
Very good. So glad that Erin Houlihan and Ellie Barbeau have made the trip from East Troy to be with us in studio, in person, to talk about the Humble Oak Folk School. So first of all, since it's your first visit, it would be good to learn a little bit about each of you in terms of where you come from, and maybe a bit about how for each of you, you have come to embrace the values that you do in terms of the world around us and so on. Erin Houlihan, let's begin with you. Tell us, tell our listeners about where you're from originally and so on.
I grew up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and I feel like I, in some ways, coming full circle, my childhood was filled with playing outside. So I was fortunate to be one of those children who got to go out and about, and we rode our bikes everywhere. We had a little creek that we would play in. We had fields that we'd go and collect butterflies and grasshoppers, and did that for most of the day until, you know, my mom would call us in at night, and then we'd still play games at night around the house. So that was, I think, the initial impulse, you know, that leads me to where I'm at now. I went to school thinking that I would go into outdoor occupational therapy. And in some respects, I feel as if I'm also doing that, because each day that we are outside with the children or the adults, it feels like it's healing work. I think I've come to believe that we all have the capacity to heal in different sorts of ways, and the trees and the woods and the plants and the animals are such healing elements for each of us. So I feel like I get to do that. But I did land after school in Montessori school. So I went to do my teacher training in Montessori. I love being with young children. I certainly resonated with them early on. I was a babysitter, and I was a good babysitter. And so I appreciated doing that work. And, you know, what drew me to Montessori was the following the child. Like, that was how it was, you know, expressed as a teacher. What you would do is really follow the interests of the children. And I liked that idea. So I did that for a few years, and in that space found a school that was working more outside with children, so I knew that that element continued to be a part of where I was headed. And then within that space, you know, kind of was feeling like that wasn't quite meeting my needs professionally, and then discovered Waldorf education, which added a lot of the artistic pieces and a little bit of a soul spiritual connection work with the children, so a little bit deeper element there. And so then was fortunate to find a position in a Waldorf school, and I really enjoyed that and learned a lot and grew as a teacher. But then even there, I kept on, you know, feeling like we need to get outside. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you'd have children who had a lot of energy, and sometimes the room would be so loud and noisy, and I felt like I needed to, you know, maybe get outside. And so, you know, was lucky and fortunate within that school to you know, bring the children outside more. But then eventually, you know, was really feeling called to maybe do something a little bit beyond those boundaries. So I left a teaching position and really started on a new venture in the backyard of my house, just a little piece of woods, and had five children. We called it Violet Glen, and it was really considered a whole child-centered learning program. So, you know, it was a combination of all the different inspirations that I had gathered along the way. And I liked, as a teacher, I like to really be open. I don't like to just, you know, take one track when I'm working with children, because they're all different and their needs are all different. So I valued being able to really, really meet their needs and to find ways to take advantage of the gifts that young children come into the world with, that wonder and awe and curiosity. And when I was in college, I was in a group, a peer resource group, and we would take other college students out on adventures. And it was with the premise that this benefit of meeting your edge and the learning that you receive when you are kind of pushed to the edge of your comfort zone, and then very, you know, gently supported in that space, and then how that you know, builds your confidence, how that changes you. And I witnessed that over and over again with these students, and I really appreciated and enjoyed, you know, being accompanying people in that place. And so I feel like in many ways, the work with the children now is supporting them in their growth and, you know, nourishing those qualities that bring us joy and happiness, but then also understanding that, you know, we need resilience and strength and courage for many parts of our life as we get older. And so providing those opportunities within the natural world so that they can discover what's a part of what's inside of them. So, you know, Violet Glen that I started at my house got to be big enough that a group of us then wanted to create a bigger space so that more children could be a part of that, and then did a lot of work investing into how we could offer an opportunity in the woods for Humble Oak, and now we're in our second year there. So it's been a long, long time work in progress, and continues to be.
Exciting. Yeah. And it's fun that we can have this conversation at this point in time when this is just taking off in some really exciting ways. Ellie Barbeau, let's find out a little bit about where you're from originally, and if your path that ended up here at Humble Oak is in any way similar to the story that Aaron just told.
Sure. So I grew up in southeast Wisconsin in the Waukesha area, and I came into the space with Humble Oak. My husband and I, currently we have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and about early on with our firstborn daughter, we knew that, you know, a kind of outdoor-centered education was going to be really important, especially in the early years of our children's education. So early on, we kind of looked at different options in the area, and it's hard to find. It's hard to find something that's, you know, affordable, that's in the distance, that is feasible to drive. And kind of happenstance, I came across the Violet Glen blog early on. And I did a little research, and it looked like right as I was looking into it was when Humble Oak was on the cusp of transitioning to their now 80-acre wooded property. And I looked at that afternoon. I emailed Aaron, and, you know, we met, and my husband and I were so excited to, you know, find this community. We didn't really know what to expect. We just kind of were in this for the aspect of an educational experience that we wanted for our 3-year-old at the time.
So you weren't necessarily looking for some kind of professional opportunity for you.
No. And so we met with Aaron, and it, you know, I remember my husband and I walking away back to our car, and it was like, this is what we're looking for, you know. And so our daughter went to the living school 2 days a week, and it's all outside. There's a beautiful yurt as the classroom. You know, she would run up to the yurt and, you know, start her day and come home, and she'd smell of wood smoke and have grass in her hair and be so muddy, and just it's an amazing experience to be able to watch, you know, children go through that. And so that's how we came across Humble Oak. And again, we thought it was just going to be the educational experience for our children, and it has turned into so much more. It has really, you know, changed our family in a lot of ways and the direction that we are taking our life as a family. And Jody Janovic, who again is the other kind of founder of Humble Oak, early on when I met her, she expressed that she was excited to kind of delve into the folk school aspect, because, I mean, really, I think the heart of Humble Oak is the children and the outdoor living school experience, because I know Aaron has said before, like, the children are our best teachers, so they really are at the heart of this Humble Oak trunk of the tree. And Jody was looking to branch out with the folk school, and I was very excited about that prospect. Again, I was just a parent wanting to be involved with the community, and you know, it really spoke to me because I am just a dabbler in life. I feel like I have done a million things, been about 7 different versions of myself, and I'm always still trying to decide what I want to be when I grow up. So to do that with Jody, I was really excited. We kind of, you know, put a lot of thought into that, and I've been helping out with the folk school, and the first class for the folk school was in September, And so that's kind of where I'm putting my energy right now. I have taught a few classes, but, you know, with the folk school, we have about 10 different instructors that we are currently either scheduled to have teaching classes or are in the works of upcoming classes. So it's a really exciting time for both the living school and the children, and this new precipice of, you know, the adult education folk school.
Very good. For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, this is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program, and she has arranged for a visit to the morning show from two staff members from the Humble Oak Outdoor Learning and Arts Collective, and specifically the Humble Oak Folk School. Erin Houlihan, who is director, and Ellie Barbeau, who is one of the folk school instructors. By the way, Ellie, as you were talking about things, you made mention of the yurt, which I think is Y-U-R-T. And I saw that term at some point on your website, something about a class that had to be postponed until the yurt could be finished or something. So explain to our listeners and to me what the yurt is.
Sure. I'll let Erin explain a little bit of that, because that's two beautiful structures. We started with one yurt, and now the living school has two. But I'll let her explain that.
Yeah, the yurt is a round structure. It's a beautifully built structure. So we, Great Lakes Yurt is where we got our yurts. And we needed to have a non-permanent shelter in the woods that we're at. So the yurt is considered a non-permanent shelter because technically you could fold it up and put it on a big trailer and move it someplace. And we like the idea of it being circular and round when we're in the yurt. There's no corners, so it feels like a warm space. And we have a little furnace in there, so with a propane gas that's heated with, so we have some heat in there. And it's all, being an outdoor program in winter in Wisconsin, we knew that we did need a space to go to for when it was necessary. And so it's, the yurt exists because of the collective contributions and donations from our community. You know, when we started on this endeavor, we were not, didn't have a lot of finances that we could bring with us. And so we, you know, needed to collectively utilize what is available. And it's been through those contributions of our community that we, you know, established our first yurt. And it was just in the last month that the second yurt for the Beavers and the Hawk program, the older kids, that yurt got finished. So last year, our older children utilized two yurt tents, so tents that look like yurts. And they did awesome. So they were certainly building their resilience. But now we have two yurt structures in the woods that we can use for our supplies and to gather in when it's cold. And it feels very simple and minimalistic, but certainly we are grateful for that shelter that we get to utilize.
So for people who don't know how a yurt is constructed, what it's made of, can you give a few details about that? How many people can be in the yurt?
We have a 24-foot yurt, and that's, I think, capacity-wise is like 35 to 40, but that would be scrunched in. Mm-hmm. We have, our class sizes range from like 12 to 14 children, and we're comfortable in there with our supplies. There's a lattice framework that is the outside of it. So when the yurt is being constructed, the platform is really the most challenging aspect of it, just to get that level and foundation. But as far as putting up the yurt itself, the last one was like a one-day project. It's like a kit that comes in a big box. And the whole circular frame is a lattice structure. And, it's got the dome on the top, and it's really beautiful. Before we, of course, we have to insulate ours, so we have, two layers of insulation around the yurt. But it smells like wood when we go in there. I mean, it definitely has such comfortable, warming aspects of it. Our second yurt is 20 foot wide, so that one is a little bit smaller, and But it feels a little bit cozier, and it's you know, our beaver and hawk groups, they're range from 12 to 15, and that's a big enough space for them all to be in there and be working or having lunch at the same time. So, you know, part of our program and our organization is really wanting to be thoughtful of all the decisions that we're making. So each time, you know, we need to purchase something or create a solution to a problem, we're really looking to be regenerative and sustainable in our decisions. And so the yurts felt like, you know, it wasn't too much, but enough, you know, to fit the needs that we have. And we're grateful for that simple space that we can use.
So when you made the move from your own backyard to this 80 acres of property, just tell us, first of all, what kind of a place were you looking for? And ultimately, what do we find on these 80 acres where you are now located?
Well, we were looking for more space. The little woods that we had utilized at Violet Glen was certainly treasured and served its purpose. But as the program expanded and grew, it kind of felt like we were like that woods needed a little rest. It certainly felt kind of small for the amount of children that were in there playing. And so we, you know, and wanted to really be have a place where kids could explore, like they could go into the woods and get kind of lost and explore. So that expansiveness. And the wood lot, which I initially knew this piece of land as, it was an exceptional kind of place where it was pretty quiet. Like it was, you know, these 80 acres that only, like, you know, certain people who kind of knew of it would go there and walk. So it was a place that I could go and usually saw, didn't see anyone. So it felt pretty uninhabited and pretty untouched. So there was that gift to it. And initially when that, you know, piece of woods was owned, I know that it was, you know, they had wanted it to be used for educational purposes. So I had in the back of my mind, you know, this piece of woods. And at the same time, you know, we knew that if we'd be bringing more kids there and more people there, that quietness of the space would change. Like it would, you know, it would bring more activity. It would bring, you know, more the impact of having more people there. So it was really a process of sort of like asking permission, you know, really feeling like the woods was a place that, you know, wanted the children to come. And through that process, you know, we felt like this would be the right space. And, you know, it's certainly a healing piece of land. And so we were given permission to be licensed to do the program there. And we really feel like the connection that the children have with the woods, you know, our hope is that it's serving that piece of land just as much as the people are getting served from the energies of the land. So, you know, we don't want to extract and take and just, you know, be takers from that the woods. We want to be putting our energy back in so that we're nourishing that piece of land through our stewardship and just through the care and love that, I mean, the children, they naturally are inclined to have an affection and a deep relationship. So, you know, we hope to be regenerative in our relationship there.
I want to talk about the folk school, and then after that, talk at least a little bit about a living school, which is that piece of all this, which involves children. Ellie Barbeau, you're one of the 10 instructors in the folk school. So tell us more about the array of offerings and what it has been like for you to be such an integral part of that.
Sure. So it's really exciting. You know, and kind of first and foremost, when Jody and I were talking about the folk school and how, you know, we could let it take shape in the community that we live in, you know, we looked at big folk schools like North House Folk School in up in northern Minnesota, and the Driftless Folk School out in Viroqua, and John C. Campbell. Those are all, you know, really leading the way for folk schools, and that's a big movement, and it's, I think, a necessary movement for the changes that, you know, are going on in society. And you know, we've talked to other people in the kind of the folk school world, and they can change the world. They can change how people see, you know, their perspective of things. So it's really exciting. But yeah, right now where we are is, again, we offered our first class in September, and we are really looking to not only offer, you know, hands-on experiences with traditional crafts, but also kind of tap into, like, the, you know, not only the hands, but the heart and mind aspect of, you know, learning and adding richness to you know, adult education and life skills. So a little snippet of what we have offered. I have taught a knitting class. We've had an herbalism class. We also, just a few weeks ago, I taught a how to spin yarn class. So taking, you know, fiber from the farm, from a sheep, and then turning it and spinning it into your own yarn. And coming up in the new year, we have classes ranging from an introduction to, you know, wild edible mushroom foraging, wet felting. There's going to be a bike tuning, bicycle tuning. There's going to be a seed saving course. There's going to be a broom making course. Linda Conroy, who is, you know, a wonderful educator in Southeast Wisconsin for a myriad of different topics, will be teaching a compassionate communication course. She'll be teaching a foraging course and a pine needle basketry course. So we really have a lot going on, a lot in the works. You know, another snippet, we're in the works with an instructor to have, like, a drumming class, you know, how to integrate drumming and wellness into the space. And it's just, we are so fortunate to, you know, be in the area that we are, because it's such a rich area to tap into. There's so many artists and makers and craftspeople and just, you know, people doing interesting things that, you know, bring a lot of value to the community, and to be able to share that is huge. So that's where we are with the folk school right now.
Hmm. I know that, for instance, one of the courses coming up that you will be teaching is on broom making.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to hear from you directly the benefit of being part of that, because I have a feeling it has a lot more to do with than just, I need another broom, I'm going to make a broom, and so on. I suspect just the act of learning how to do that and the doing is a lot more than just creating a broom.
Sure. So that is a relatively new skill for me. I've learned it probably about a year and a half ago, but, you know, I I'm a dabbler, so I caught onto it. I kind of delved into it. But, you know, it's a really exciting thing to, you know, one, have a lot of people that are, like, experts in the crafts that they teach. But, for example, with this broom making class that I will be teaching, I'm learning too, and it's a skill, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to share with the community that you don't have to be an expert. I'm going to be learning right alongside these students, but it's something that I've enjoyed doing, and I'm excited to share. So, yeah, it's not only about the process of, you know, inviting students and participants to make something with their own hands and leave the class with, you know, a product that they made and can be proud of, but it's also that sense of how important it is to gather as a community, make something together, and learn from one another. So, sure, we have a lot of, you know, experts and people that, you know, for example, a ceramics teacher, he's a professor, he'll be teaching. You know, he's an expert in his field. That's what he teaches. But then there's, you know, other instructors that we have, like myself with the broom making, that it's a skill that we'd like to share. I've also taught a spinning course, and, you know, I'm much more seasoned in spinning, which is exciting to teach. But, you know, Jody and I and some of the other, you know, people involved with this folk school wanted to make sure that, you know, the offer to learn skills and to share skills was open to everybody, because I think that's important. It can be intimidating to, you know, to always need to find the, you know, person at the top of their field or that kind of thing. So skill sharing is a really important idea to us.
I love that.
And I think, too, you know, you can go into any big box store or any store and you can buy a broom and it's all plastic. Every last bit of it is plastic. So eventually it ends up in the landfill to live there forever, sadly. But when you make a broom, it's and correct me if I'm wrong, Ellie, it's all natural materials. So it becomes also a beautiful work of art that's useful. And I think everything should be beautiful and useful. And then when you look at this thing that you made, you suddenly sort of have pride of ownership in a way. And you think about all of the people who've come before you who've made their brooms because they had to, because we didn't have big box stores or some store to go get a plastic broom. So if you've ever seen any handmade brooms, they're really, really lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm really glad you brought that up because, you know, with the Living School and the Folk School, it is a very big, important value, you know, to both missions of the Living School and the Folk School that, you know, we be very conscientious about, you know, the supplies that we use, the resources that, you know, we tap into, you know, where we get the supplies, you know, really putting an emphasis on natural and regenerative resources, local resources. So that's a very big concept that.
Yeah, and that's part of that Living School, because we're all needing to practice living, regenerative living practices. So all of the decisions that we make with the Folk School or the Living School is also with the effort for us as adults to learn new ways of engaging with the earth so that we are not creating so much harm. And, you know, there's a lot of healing that has to happen in a real serious way. And so, you know, taking that responsibility serious. So as we're learning as adults, you know, in the Living School, we had the children brushing the broom corn, and they're, you know, learning that skill, not like a class in the Folk School or Folk School, but they're practicing, you know, having a relationship with that broom corn. And then we make little simple brooms, and then it's like, oh, like, this doesn't have to come from the store. I can actually grow this or find this within the woods and you know, make things that I can use, and then they can go back to the earth. And so it's real, yeah, that real thoughtfulness in all of the decisions.
Can you tell us more about the decision to call this a Living School? That is this program that involves children of various ages, but it's an intriguing name.
Yeah, well, because it is, we, you know, I think anytime you sort of peg yourself into being something and doing something in a certain way, you begin to lose sight of the unfolding presence that is before us. And so, you know, we want to be aware and present to what the needs are in that moment. And, you know, in this moment, we can see, you know, recognize the needs for the children, the needs for us as adults, and then make decisions based on that. But we want to continue to be fresh in that perspective so that we don't just continue to do something only because that's what we've always done or that's what we do. But so we really, and I guess that's part of the Humble Oak. You know, I mean, when we were deciding a name for this program, it was a really big task. You know, what are we going to call ourselves? Like, what is this? And that humble word was important because, you know, if we're humble enough to always be learning, and, you know, if I say that I know this is the way to do it and this is how we're going to do it, then I lose the perspective of being aware of changing something so that it can accurately meet the children's needs or the needs of the community. And so when it's living, we see it as it continue to grow and evolve and shift and change. And we are, you know, willing and open to, you know, recognizing that and shifting within that. So it's challenging, you know, it's much easier to have like a list to say, you know, this is what you do every day and this is how it gets done. But it's super, you know, powerful and enlivening to be able to approach each day and really be present with the needs of the people that you're with and to, you know, make the decisions based on that. So, yeah.
Maybe you could just briefly explain in terms of what is offered through a Living School with these three tiers, the squirrels and the beavers and the hawks, depending on the age groups. But what kind of an education this is, and in a sense, if it is intended to be a child's whole educational experience or something that is folded into something else that they're already experiencing.
Yeah, so we have the squirrels and the beavers and the hawks. That's the names that we've given the different age groups. And so our youngest group of children right now are the squirrels, and that's typically ages 3 to 6 or 7. And that is, you know, and all of our programs are mostly outdoor-based, but the squirrels is primarily play-based and adventure-based. So we go out into the woods and we play and go on adventures, and a place where they can be in social interaction with their peers. So I, you know, through my experience of being with young children, I find such deep value for them in being able to play, expand and experiment with their imagination, but then also to engage and interact with their friends. And there's so much learning that goes on just in those simple opportunities that are given to them, and that really is space and time. So we give them space and time to play and grow and learn, and then in that time as the adults, you know, we have meaningful work and projects that we're working on that's related to the season. So we're trying to, you know, if it's a growing season, then that has to do with, you know, seeds and planting and weeding and tending. Or if it's harvesting, you know, we're connected with the plants in the woods. So we might be, you know, pulling vines out to be used for basketry or for wreaths. And so we, you know, as the adults are practicing meaningful work, and then the children can be engaged in that, but they're not required to. We really allow them to use their time, you know, meaningful for them. And some of them want to be working, and they're whittling, or they're making pencils, or, you know, they're making mud cakes. There's all different variety. And then our beaver group, which is ages typically 10 or 7 to 10, that is a little bit more project-based. So we, you know, we certainly have certain projects that we're working on, again, in relationship to the season. It's, you know, the play is a little bit more games. So they love games, love games. Like, we got a lot of games going on. So that play is, you know, continues to be there, but in a little bit different way. And within the games, there's so much learning that goes on with, you know, competition, and you're supporting one another, and you're, you know, discovering your own capacities and skills. And then also, you know, they go out and go for a walk in the woods, so that and we're giving them a little bit more you know, content that, like, knowledge-based content as far as the names of the trees, and really discovering a little bit more of the detail of the beings that we're sharing that space with. And, you know, beginning to have conversations, like council, we call it. So when they come together, and if there is an issue that comes up within the day, we help them practice good communication skills, how you share and that. So, you know, we're really trying to tend to some of these areas that in our fast-paced systems and world, and, you know, that is largely, you know, they're on devices and communicating that kind of way, where they can begin to learn how to express themselves, how to listen to others, how to work in community with one another. And, you know, in all of it, you know, whether it be the squirrels, the beavers, or the hawks, we're really wanting to tend to each child's, we call it like the inner spark. So like that, you know, we believe that we've all come into the world with a capacity, a unique capacity, you know, of how we flourish and the gifts that we bring. So we're trying to really tend to that inner spark. And so the Hawks is our oldest group, and they're 11 to 14. And that becomes, again, a little bit more individual, and we're wanting to really engage in their passion. So if there's something that they're really curious about, you know, we're trying to provide the tools and the resources for them to expand in that curiosity and, you know, maybe create something. And that's a little bit deeper council communication work, so giving them a little bit more responsibility, you know, with the craft fair that we just had. We had the Hawks kind of overseeing the student table and the logistics of that, and, you know, wanting their voice to be heard and to let them know that, you know, it's important. And we're still evolving in how we can bring their voice into our organizational spaces. Like we, you know, we have a board and we would love to have a student representative, you know, be a part of our board so that they can feel like their voice has meaning. But then also with the oldest kids, we like to go around and go on adventures in the wider community. So get to know what people are doing, you know, the whole place-based, land-based, community-based, really deeply getting to know their surroundings in a way that we don't as easily get to do that often. Mm. You know, we're a little bit more in our individual, you know, closed spaces.
So. Right.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about something on your website that intrigued me very much, and I hope I can read my handwriting, where it said, through active engagement in an asset-framing mindset, we will strive to always see each individual's best light and appreciate our work and humbly respect and care. I am so intrigued by that, those words, asset framing, through active engagement in an asset framing mindset. Explain what's behind those words.
It's the approach of, you know, I guess if you're in a classroom with children, let's say, and you have the kids that are getting into trouble, you know, and they're, you know, have to go out in the hall or have to, you know, they get a punishment or, you know, they can't do this because they're not they're not able to go along with the flow for the rest of the kids. So asset framing mindset is looking at each individual and recognizing their gifts that they bring. So that's every individual child. And, you know, also recognizing the challenges that they may carry, but seeing that as how we can shift and accommodate the space and the environment and the circumstance so that their best light can show. So it's, okay. And that is with everyone. So, you know, every time we have someone who, let's say, joins our board or becomes a part of our committee or, you know, is a staff member or a parent in our community, we are trying to see everyone's best light and make a space for that rather than, well, they don't do this or, you know, like, you see the negative of the interaction or engagement. It's looking to see what gifts each individual brings and how we can create space and nourish and manifest that light. So it's in the work with the children, it's super important. You know, it's creating room and space for every child, and that's a, you know, a big responsibility. But if when you begin to practice in that way, it becomes exciting because everyone then can feel like there's room for me. And we all have our challenges, and we, you know, to see that not as a negative thing or, you know, I'm bad, but just to see it as part of being human and, you know, how can we support each other in working through those challenges. So it's as a teacher, it's a gift to be able to actually have the opportunity to engage with the children that way, because it does require you having an open, you know, if you have a curriculum of things that you need to get to and check off the list, there isn't space and time to actually meet each child in that that realm. So it's feels like a fortunate gift that we have.
Ellie Barbeau, what has it meant to you to be a part of the Humble Oak Folk School?
Well, I feel like even before being a part of the folk school, I have to recognize the importance that it is to just be a part of the Humble Oak community. Again, I said that before, but we just went in, my husband and I, as parents, and this was just going to be, we'd drop our four-year-old off, you know, hope she had a good day, let her play outside. That was, you know, really important to us, and she'd come home, and that was it. But Humble Oak has really gone so much beyond that. I never, you know, you hear people say, well, you're, you know, find your tribe and find your community. And that is what this has been. You know, it's been huge for us. And you can tell just by the other families and other, you know, people involved with the community that that's important too. That's the key, you know, the key cohesive energy with Humble Oak. And, you know, so that's really the heart of the importance to me, but to be able to, you know, allow that for my children and then be able to be a part of Humble Oak, you know, in the parent aspect, but also with the folk school, to be able to broaden the reach of all of the goodness that Humble Oak wants to put out into the community. This folk school aspect can reach adults in such an important way and provide so much richness, you know, to the families and adults in the community. Mm-hmm. So
if people want to contact the Humble Oak Outdoor Learning and Arts Collective to find out more, to perhaps be a part of it or support what you do or sign up for some of these classes that are coming up, what is the best way for them to connect with you?
I think through our website, humbleoak.org, and then we have the email address there that you can reach out, and we're attentive to that, and we'll get back to you shortly. So in that, within that website, it has a link to the folk school, so all of the information is there in that same space, and it's all, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we try to be very, you know, present with social media now. That's a really good way to spread the word into the community. So, you know, with the folk school, we are, you know, on Instagram at Humble Oak Folk School, and the children's outdoor learning aspect has an Instagram page too. But to kind of keep up to date on the events going on within the community, Facebook and Instagram are a good way to kind of the daily aspects. But you know, going through the website to find out more about the children's programming and also the folk school, you can register for classes there as well.
Excellent. Erin Houlihan and Ellie Barbeau from the Humble Oak Folk School and Humble Oak Outdoor Learning and Arts Collective, thank you so much for making the trip here to join us here on the morning show. It's been great to talk with you and great to hear about all that you are offering in so many different ways. And very best wishes as you move forward from here.
Thank you so much.
That was lovely. Thank you.
Good to have you here. Nan, I know you have a couple of announcements you want to share.
I do. You know, our announcements are always very important. And here's one of the most important, and this is an event you can take part in your front yard, your backyard, somewhere that it's nice and dark. And that event that's happening now is called the Geminid Meteor Shower. It's supposed to peak tonight, but it will continue through December 24th. So if it's a clear night, get a little hot chocolate, get a little bundled up, go outside and look at the night sky. You should be able to see at least one shooting star, as we call them, an hour, if not more. It's a wonderful thing to do. I think it just is so awe-inspiring to see this happen. It transforms you back into a kid almost immediately, and it's good for kids to get out there, too, and look at the night sky. Then Riverbend Nature Center has their winter break camp. It begins December 26th and goes through December 29th from 9 in the morning until 2 p.m. Ages 7 to 12 are the age range for the kids. It's $40 per day for members, $45 per day for people who are yet to be members. Space is limited, and so registration is required. They do so many wonderful things. They're outside, they're hiking and tracking and doing all kinds of cool things. So get your kids signed up. Just go to the website for Riverbend Nature Center to do that. Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center is having a winter solstice celebration on December 21st from 6:30 until 8 p.m. All ages are welcome. The event is free, but a suggested donation of $5 is appropriate and most appreciative. You'll discover the wonders of winter in Wisconsin with a guided luminary hike. You'll learn about native Wisconsin winter birds and have a lot of fun with adult and family activities at the solstice celebration. The gift shop will be open for last minute gift giving. The hikes begin at 6:45 and then again start at 7:30 on the front lawn of the farmhouse. We'll have a candlelight passing and winter intentions meditation at the beginning of each hike, followed by the walking portion along the trail for those who are interested and able. Just go to the website. You don't have to register, but it'll give you all the details.
Fantastic. Nan, thank you for all the morning shows you have helped bring to us in 2023 and years before. And on to 2024. We look forward to future Nan Calvert programs on the morning show.
Oh, thank you, Greg. It's my pleasure.
It's a minute before 9 o'clock. Tomorrow on the morning show, all music. First, a preview of the Sing-Along Messiah coming up this Sunday evening at 6 o'clock, which I happen to be conducting. We'll have Jessica DeBoer with us, who is coordinating this event. And then also a preview of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band's Christmas concert, which is tomorrow night in beautiful Siebert Chapel on the campus of Carthage College. We'll be talking with their music director.